Hey guys, welcome to episode 8 of the To Be Fit podcast. My name is Ian Bickle. Today I am joined with another MNU student in Simon De Boer. I hope I've said that right, Simon. Simon is from a company, owns a company called Triforce Endurance. He's an award-winning trainer, which I'm going to ask about. A triathlete and a triathlon and nutritional coach. So welcome to the podcast and thank you, Simon, for joining us.
Thanks, Ian. Yeah, you got my name right.
Yeah, great. So for the listeners, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I've been in the industry for a while now, and I started off as a personal trainer and focused mainly on fat loss and weight loss populations. And I kind of enjoyed that, but my main focus has always been, long distance. So I started off as a kid doing tetrathlon, which is running, cycling, shooting, and horse riding.
Wow. What a combo.
And then I always rode a bike as a kid and really enjoyed my long distance stuff. So I've always really kind of been in fitness. I was a professional racehorse jockey for a bit and I was rubbish at that.
How tall are you, Simon?
5'7".
Is that tall? That's tall for a jockey, isn't it?
It's tall for a flat racehorse jockey, but it's short for a jump jockey, and I was a jump jockey.
All right.
So I did that for a bit, realised I wasn't particularly good at it, and then decided I wanted to go into fitness, so I got into the world of PTing, and basically developed my knowledge and understanding from that. So that was many years ago, and went and studied lots of different courses and all those sort of things, self-taught most of the time, did lots of different nutritional courses, but my passion's always been long distance. So about 4.5 years ago, I decided that I would niche right down and just do triathlon. And I love it. It's great. It's such a great sport to be in. There's so much to learn. And my passion has always been nutrition. So trying to help people get as lean as they can, but also have as much power on the bike and the swim and the run and have lots of energy. And the reason why I did MNU is because I've learned a lot, and I know there's gaps in my knowledge, and I also know there's also some myths and some weird stuff that I've learned that has changed over time from the people I've learned stuff. And I think as a critical thinker, I look at everything and go, is that true? Is that right? Am I saying this properly? Where can I learn it so I know that the facts that I'm getting is right? Because that worries me sometimes, because you read something or you trust it from a source and you think, I'm not sure that's right, you know. And also I've studied to be a tutor. So I was working as a level 3 tutor for personal training, and some of the stuff I was teaching, I was like, that's wrong. That's really wrong. And when I realized that, I was like, actually, I need to go and re-educate myself properly. And for a long time, I didn't know where to get that from, because some of the trusted people I was looking at was like, I don't really know if that's the direction I want to look at. And then when I was, because I listened to lots of podcasts and went to Danny Lennon's seminars last year, and he was talking about Martin, and I'm like, right, I'm going to go and learn from Martin when it opens up.
Brilliant. And you know, for me, I'm genuinely intrigued and will be delving into this sort of endurance side of kind of fitness, which isn't something I've particularly explored and probably won't. And this is the joy of the podcast, is that it allows kind of diversity regardless of people's backgrounds. So I'm definitely interested in hearing a little bit more about you know, things that will help people become the ultimate, well, the way you see it, the ultimate kind of endurance athlete. This week's subject or module on MNU is about nutritional myths, and we got in contact last week when it was about energy systems. So we're going to kind of amalgamate the two. So my first question is, I come to you and I say, listen, I'm interested in being a triathlete. Where on earth do I start?
Oh, blimey. First off, can you swim?
Me, no. I mean, I can. I'm what you call an A to B swimmer, and I used to be a qualified lifeguard. So,
all right, okay. So A to B swimmers, we can take A to B swimmers and make them very good, but it's very tough as an online coach to be able to teach someone how to swim. So the way that we run the business is, because I have a head coach, Billy Harris, that works with me, and the way we run Triforce is that you need to have a basic understanding of being able to swim, bike, and run at a certain level. I can't take you from nothing and teach you. Although, having said that, it has happened because people come on board, they like what we do. So we've coached people to do marathons, and then they've said, well, actually, I'd quite like to do 70.3, which is half an Ironman. So we've coached them to do that, and we've then guided them who are the best swim coaches out there across the country. And we've just, out of our scope of practice, you could say, we've gone, well, go to this person. That's really good. They will help you get this. And then it's basically just a question of starting someone from, like anything, when someone comes to you and says, I want to lose weight, but they're overweight, where do you start them? You start from where they are, and you start to move them and progress them up. And we do it just like you would do in the gym. We progress them and we do different sets and blocks of training. So we go, well, we're going to take you from this point, and we're going to build your, let's say, aerobic base to start off with, and then we're going to build your threshold, and then we might do a bit of strength and threshold stuff, and then back to aerobic base so we can give them a bit of deload. There are many ways to skin a cat when it comes to training someone for triathlon. So it's a really broad question and a hard question to answer. And it very, very much depends on the individual and what their background is.
What are common situations that you can kind of, you come into quite often with new clients, would you say?
I think the hardest thing as a coach, and I think if I got a pound for every time I said this, I'd be very rich. It's to back off and do less intensity, but be specific with what you need to do. Because there is still that old age thought process for most people when they train, is that more is better, and harder and faster always means better. And it doesn't, because you've got to factor in things like total fatigue from training. And, you know, if you, as I said to, in fact, I said to an athlete yesterday, if you're always going hard, if I wrote a program for you and said, right, I want you to go threshold in this session, threshold in this session, just under threshold at this session, above threshold at this session, and do that every session, do you think you'd be able to do that daily? And they were like, no. I'm like, well, that's roughly what you're doing, because you're either hitting threshold or just underneath it, because you're trying to push the envelope in your training sessions. Like, really enjoy the easy bits, because your hard bits should be hard. And if you understand the nuance of that, you'll get fitter. And you'll also be able to produce the results and goods that need to be produced when we're asking you for it. So you'll actually get faster, because you're able to continually do it every time we ask you to do it. I think that's the hardest thing to get across to most people. I know, because although we specialize on 70.3 and Ironman and triathlon, I've also coached people to do road racing on bikes. And we coach people to do cycle cross, because we've got a really good crossover from that. We understand the basic demands of the sport. And I've got a guy that's working with me at the moment who, in the space of 3 years, just up to 3 years now, he's now lying second in the Southwest Cyclocross League. And this year, I asked him what he, apart from all the strength training stuff we've been doing, I asked him what the one aspect of his training that he thinks he's approached differently to get the results that he wants. He said, without a doubt, it's learning to back off and not go hard when I ask him to do that.
This whole big picture thinking.
Yeah, It's I think that's the toughest thing. And that's the great thing. Billy and I will say this to everybody when they come on board. We can write you the greatest program, but actually it's the coaching that makes the difference. It's actually us being able to say, look, just trust us on this, or, you know, what's going on, or, because human beings are weird, right? You know, they're all driven by emotions and worried about being slow or weak or useless and all that sort of stuff. And we have to pick them up and go, look, don't worry about this. Just focus on this, and give them coaching. That's real coaching, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of a saying that I do say to people. I goes, you know, training and nutrition simple. It's people that's complicated.
and
you know, we take quite often things that are maybe overwhelming to them and just put it into manageable, sort of easy sound bites that make sense.
And I the same thing for nutrition, right? You know, and this is my whole focus. Oh, I say whole focus, but a lot of my focus is focused on nutrition and helping our athletes try and get lean and understand how to get lots of energy in their training. And that's just like the fat loss populations and personal training populations that you work with. There's a lot of myths and fat weird stuff that goes on in the industry. Some of it is backed up with science, and some of it is backed up with assumption. And, you know, I find it really hard. We're in our private groups. We're just running each week. We're doing live stuff into the groups, and we're talking about nutrition and periodization of nutrition and understanding what works and what doesn't work and why you should go down this route, or maybe you shouldn't even consider it. And I think one of the things I learned last year was, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should it comes to nutrition. And I keep saying that to a lot of my athletes, because they always come back to me and say, what about fat adaptation? Should I go down that route? Should I do ketogenic diets to get more metabolically flexible? Should I go down that route? So I explain the pros and cons about it. And, you know, you can say two and four for everything, but for the most part of, what's great about doing Martin's course is it's even taught me that I'm a bit biased about my thinking when it comes to overall being broad on nutrition. There are times that actually maybe fat adaptation or working down that route would be better for an athlete. But I always look at it from a perspective of how stressful is their life, how stressful is their training, and it's a lot of thinking from a nutrition perspective to try and eke out a little bit of performance where they could potentially make that performance on training, eat really well and have a broad spectrum of foods where they're not stressing about it and just focusing on calories and energy, and enjoying their training and not feeling that they're drilling down to something that potentially might not work because they're not following it properly. It's a big, it's multi-complex, I think, with the nutritional world. And I see a lot of coaches in the long distance community banging on about fat adaptation and saying we should all go down that route. And I think potentially I disagree with that.
So, I can imagine, you know, you see a lot more of it because you're in that world. And is that something that's quite common amongst other coaches in your field, I guess, that, you know, they are saying having this fat adapted metabolism, I guess, is more beneficial than a more flexible metabolism as far as energy systems are concerned?
I think from that perspective, and let's not get into super geeky side of things, but I think from that perspective, from a fat adaptive perspective, there are pros and cons for it. If you're just working on a very easy training principle and it's all aerobic, fat adaptation will work quite nicely. But you've got to be careful, because if you go down the fat adaptation route, we're talking about fat adaptation, not ketosis, but it takes about 4 days roughly for you to get into sort of the fat adapted state. But in the same time it takes you to get 4 days into that state, it also takes you 4 days to become sort of less glycogen adapted. So there's a problem with that in my mind, that a lot of our athletes are doing hard stuff in their training, and that has a little bit of a negative ramification to that hard training, because if you can't push hard in those hard training slots, so you're just under par in that training, you're never going to get the best out of it. Now, it's not just from a physical aspect that I look at that. If you're consistently doing it at that time, so let's say you are fat adapted and you ask your athlete to go in and do what we would term, let's just say HIIT, so like really high intensity sessions for like a minute or 30 seconds or maybe 2 minutes and go really hard. Doesn't generally happen, but I'm just trying to give context to this. When you're fat adapted, you can't do that minute as hard as you possibly can do. It's just almost virtually impossible to give it everything you've got. You just don't have the ability to push hard because you need carbohydrates for the muscle to fully contract. And potentially, if you were an athlete and I ask you to do that over, let's say, several sessions over a week, over a month, and you can't hit that, what I always look at from this, especially from our top pointy end athletes, is that if you're not able to hit those sessions at the point that we want you to hit them, potentially psychologically, you're going to affect that athlete saying, and they could go away thinking, I am not good enough for this. So it's not just a question of nutrition. It's also a question of lots of other things that happen underneath that. So being very narrow minded on the fat adaption, I always look at this from my perspective. Why do fat adaption at all? And there's really good science to say that if you go down the fat adapted route, you can improve your mitochondrial biogenesis, so you get more mitochondria in the muscles, and potentially that can help you push harder because you're shuttling lactate within the muscles more, so it spills over and the body uses the lactate as fuel. So potentially if you increase your mitochondrial biogenesis and the number of mitochondria within your muscles, you're able to go faster and harder for a little less effort, which, let's face it, every athlete wants to do, and that's really cool. But if you stay in fat adaption all the time, you lose your top end, and that's going to affect how you train in some cases. So my way of looking is there a better way of doing that, and should we be really polarized in our thinking? And I think just because we understand that the body is always trying to be in homeostatic state, if it upregulates one thing, it always downregulates something else. I don't want it to downregulate anything. So I think new science coming in says that actually you can, if you periodize your nutrition and you're thinking about it, you can get the best of both worlds. You never downregulate your carbohydrate or your body's ability to fully use carbohydrate, and you never downregulate your body's ability to fully utilize fat stores, and that's something I'm learning about now.
So in a practical sense, how would that work out? Would that be with carbohydrate refeeds, or how we're structuring, say, like somebody's microcycle as far as nutrition, or a weekly block, would you say? Does it depend on their training load?
I think the easiest way to do this is you can do a hard session and then you just don't eat any carbohydrates afterwards. So let's say you go and do a hard swim or turbo session or run session. When you come home from that session in the evening, you just come home and you just eat a higher fat meal, higher protein meal, very low carbohydrate, and go to bed. It's really that simple. Or you start your day fasted, or you start your day on a high protein meal, low carbohydrate meal, and you can do it that way if you want to. But it depends on the demands of it, of the training session that's coming up next, I think, that matters most.
Mm-hmm. And I'd imagine it would depend massively on the level the individual wants to get to as well.
Yeah, so I think when we've got our pointy end athletes who are literally trying to get that minutiae faster, then we can really be drilling down on that and go, look, maybe we need to periodize this and think about how that works. But then these guys are absolutely on it with their training and nutrition anyway. I think for the general age group athlete who's just trying to get faster, it depends on speed. It depends on how fast the athlete is. Because if they're just a completer and they're just trying to do it in a nice steady state, then, hey, do you know what? Fat adaption could work. But what we're always trying to do is get our athletes to go faster. So a lot of our training is not just done at steady state cardio. And I think I'll go back to the original comment that I said. Just because you can do something doesn't mean that you should. And potentially, it's so much easier to make sure an athlete sleeps well, drinks plenty of fluids, eats a nice broad range spectrum of food that is very easy for them to do and hit calorie balance. And they'll still get a great performance in their training. And they'll be happier for it too, because they're not constantly thinking about food. Yeah. So I think, in my mind, it depends. It's always a depends. It's quite a complex thing. Now we've talked about it, and I didn't want to get geeky. We got a bit geeky and we got a bit complex.
I think it's necessary sometimes.
I think this is the thing. I think from my perspective, working with athletes, I just try and keep it really straightforward. Try not to make it too complex, because they've got loads of things going on. A lot of our athletes, even though they're at the top end of their game, they still work 24/7. They've got families, and they don't want to have to deal with all this. They just want to train. So it just depends. Our really top end pro athletes, we can work on that aspect because they don't have that stress in their life. But yeah, lots to talk about from that perspective.
Yeah. From a commitment standpoint, what sort of is the average? I assume the more advanced, the more volume they're going to have to put in. However, what's the kind of average amount of, or maybe it's a less, you know, you're saying sometimes less is more, the more advanced you become. So how does that look in terms of how much time you dedicate towards each bit criteria, I guess?
Yeah, do you know, again, you know, how do you skin a cat? I don't think you need to spend a lot of, well, if you're doing 70.3, even Ironman, you can train for a maximum of about 12 hours if you want to. If you're tight on time, it just depends on the quality of those sessions. There's a thread of thought that you could say if you're a decent swimmer, you need to do less. A decent swimmer and you're, you know, you need to pick up on the other two, you could do less swimming and more biking or running. Because if you improve your bike, you could potentially really save yourself time on that. If you improve your run, you'll definitely save your time on that. And if you're a fairly decent swimmer, if you spend more time in the pool, you're probably going to save yourself a few minutes. So, you know, if you invest your time wisely, you could improve your times quite well in the swim and in the bike and the run. So I guess it really depends on where you are as an athlete. So if you're a terrible swimmer, you kind of need to spend a bit more time. But there are ways to do it, right? So a lot of people would think I need to spend more hours and hours in the pool. And from my mind, you could easily break that up and do maybe 30 minutes every second day in the pool, because you'll go in there with a fresh mindset, learn something new and come out of it. And it's repetition in swimming and good repetition that gets you a better swimmer. Because swimming's not generally about fitness. I've seen lots of people of all different shapes swim. And sometimes you think, how can that person swim that speed when they look out of shape? And they are generally out of shape, but they just understand how to swim. They've got a really good technique. So swimming's all technique stuff. So again, it's individual to each athlete. But I would always say focus on the bike and the run. That's where you'll get your biggest return for your investment.
Is swimming quite a difficult one for people, do you find? Is that something that they tend to struggle with, do you think?
A lot of people that start this sport start it sort of from about sort of maybe middle age, and they may have never really swum before in their lives, or maybe they swam as a kid, but they've never actually swum competitively. So it can be, it's the biggest sticking block, I think, when it comes to triathlon, because it is the one thing that, that people struggle with. And bear in mind, not all, in fact, all 70.3s and Ironman are in open water. And that's quite scary for a lot of people who've never swum in the sea or an open water environment. So they do need to overcome a lot of fears from that perspective. But yeah, the swimming's the tough bit. It's not an easy sport, I'll be honest. But it's a fun sport. It's a great sport. And it gets very addictive because you suddenly start seeing yourself progress. And that's the fun bit about coaching. It's like, if you do this properly, if you really think about how you do these things, you don't need to invest a shed load of time. So a lot of people that come to us, we see them and they've done way too much volume and not enough of specificity when it comes to trying to build their speed and their strength and their power. And when we bring it back, we go, well, you've got your life back a little bit, but you've also improved in your performance.
Yeah, and I suppose when you have a true athlete, it is about reeling them in sometimes, because their own, positive attitude towards training is quite often what does get in the way.
I'd say ego there.
Yeah, ego. That's... Didn't want to say that, but yeah. I mean, what about your training, Simon? What does that look like? And what does, I mean, your training and nutrition, I guess?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm 47 now. So I've done Ironman and 70.3. Unfortunately, my Achilles is not right. And my I've got a bone spur at the bottom of my calcaneus, which is catching into my Achilles, so I can run for 20 minutes, but then after that, it causes so much friction at the back of it that it literally cripples me and makes me stop. And I could potentially have an operation on it, but I don't know if I want to go down that route yet. I'm still deciding on it. So my triathlon career has pretty much come to grinding halt at the moment, just now, until I decide that. So I'm now focusing on the bike. And I'm half thinking what I might do is do a swim bike, which is, that's becoming quite popular. But actually, I love the bike. And one of the things I'm going to do is start doing a bit more endurance riding and some road racing and some time trialing. Because the time trial is all about you and being as fast as you possibly can. And I think the one thing that I'm starting to look at now, because I'm 47 and I want to be strong and I want to be fast, and I just like everybody else, my ego says I don't want to be old. So I'm looking at my training as a 47-year-old and look at my nutrition slightly differently, and I'm making sure that I'm holding on and building to everything that I'm losing as I get older. And that requires me to do more strength training, less volume, more power work on the bike. I eat more protein in my diet. I'm looking at my total calorie intake, so I'm making sure I don't get heavy. I'm taking certain supplements to make sure that when I do go and do those really key sessions, I'm getting the most out of them.
For 47, you don't look half bad, Simon. and I think the older you get, the more mature you get, you kind of start again having this big picture view about everything, and you know, find, well, maybe recovery isn't what it used to be. And I think that correlates with the additional of life stresses. You know, prior to the podcast, you did say that you're busy as hell.
Yeah.
And you know, you've got other projects going on as well as studying MNU. You mentioned supplements there. Are there any particular supplements that you do recommend for kind of endurance-based athletes?
I think, recovery is key, really important, especially for me. So I think whey protein with a high leucine content is important, because I just don't eat enough. I don't eat much meat, I'm going to be honest. And it's not just, I think it's just, when I thought about it, someone asked me the other day, I'm almost vegetarian, but I eat a bit of meat whenever I eat, when I do. And it's not out of a conscious decision, it's just the way that I do. So therefore, I need to make sure I hit my total protein content and whole protein content properly. So I generally supplement it with whey protein. I think some of the science says that having high-strength omega-3s is really good, especially for aging muscle. Creatine monohydrate, I think it's because I don't eat a lot of meat, it's good to put that back in. Allows my muscle to contract at its fullest. So if I'm doing strength training or plyometrics or any power stuff I'm doing on the bike, that's going to help that. And then when it comes to performance, I've been using beta-alanine.
I was going to try and impress you there, but yeah, you brought it up.
beta-alanine and citrulline mallet as a 1-2 combo. And I've been really impressed with that. Really impressed with that. It's amazing just how much, when you start taking it, and consistently taking it over time, how much you can push hard and you feel like you can still put a bit more extra in. And you think, well, surely I can't be doing that. And I've used it when I've been racing and I've always been really impressed with that. It just allows you to put a bit more power into the pedals and push away. So it's, you know, I think it's a really good supplement to take.
And beta-alanine is typically what's found in pre-workouts for those that are listening, and it gives you the tingles. And those bodybuilders out there, pretty much does nothing for you apart from giving you the tingles. It's something that really kicks in that kind of lactate threshold area as a hydrogen buffer, if I'm... Citrulline malate is typically in these pre-workouts out as well, but is massively underdosed because it's quite an expensive supplement, if I'm right. Usually about 6 grams, is 6 to 8 grams or so is the recommended dose.
What I use is I'm allowed to say supplement companies.
Yeah, we're not sponsored, but go for it.
genetic supplements do a really good beta-alanine product.
Is that Sustain?
Yeah.
Well, genetic supplements are local to us up in the north. Yeah, like you're talking maybe 20 minutes drive away. One of the athletes at our gym, Evander, is sponsored by them. Evander Harewood.
Don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, he is. But genetics are, yeah.
But I think it's a great supplement to take. And a lot of my, I coach a chap called Nick Blight, who's a cyclocross athlete. And he uses it because his sport is just so glycolytic. It's literally from start to finish, 45 minutes, absolute max all the way around. And he's sitting second in the Cycle Cross Southwest League at the moment. And it's a brilliant product for him. It's perfect, made for him, really.
Yeah, I think, they definitely do some good stuff up at Genetics, so, you know, give them a shout out.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I'm all game for, like, giving good companies a little bit of a shout out, so... As far as supplements are concerned, like, you know, are they a company that you use for your protein and things like that?
Not generally for the protein, but I do use them for gut health. So I tend to use their probiotics because they, you know, you look around and I'm never quite sure of where to get these from. And I look at Holland and Barrett, never quite sure whether they're good quality enough. But I also, you know, looking at genetic supplements, you can almost guarantee that they're fairly well researched and they've got a good culture to them. And we get, I tend to get my athletes to do probiotics from them and L-glutamine from them as well.
Yeah, I think, it's the same with coaching. It's trust, isn't it? And amongst coaches and supplement companies, you know, I just tell people to generally try and find a good one that, and I will help them in that quest. You know, if somebody goes to me, hey, I want to do a triathlete, I'm not going to go, oh, wait, you just jump on a bike, I'm going to send them your way, you know. And it's the same with supplement companies. If you know fine well that these are kind of a good egg, then by all means, send people that way. You mentioned as well about sometimes I might jump back and forward just as things crop up. So you mentioned about people's weights, and I'm imagining you've got to be fairly lean to, well, you tell me, what's the kind of ideal body composition for this sort of sport?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's a really good question. Look, you you do, there's power to weight ratio, and you need to be lean. Or being lean is, if we define that better, if being lean will mean you have a better power to weight ratio. But I, you know, I'll say this to a lot of people that I meet. I actually think the long distance community take it too far sometimes, and I think they're too lean. And potentially, a lot of people are leaving performance on the table because they are too lean. And our sport is not immune to people thinking that having a very tight six pack means performance. And sometimes you look at that and you think that athlete doesn't look healthy. And I was. And maybe this is my bias, and I need to check it a little bit. But I look at it and go, potentially you could be a couple of percent body fat, slightly higher, feel happier about yourself, have a better hormonal profile, sleep better at night, and be able to consistently put out decent metrics in training rather than be super lean and just feel constantly knackered. And I think there needs to be a in our industry, a real understanding from that, because I hear it all the time. I need to be that lean. I need to be there. People see that as the only or a metric of success in performance. It's hard because if you look at all the magazines and things like that, all the athletes are like super ripped, and we're not immune to what you guys are when it comes to fat loss and bodybuilding. And what people don't realize is these people aren't actually long distance athletes at all, that on the front of, or in some cases aren't long distance athletes on the front of running magazines and stuff, they're models. So I'm not advocating be very heavy and overweight, by far from it, but I am saying that maybe we need to have a healthier perspective on that front.
And have you found this has kind of crept into your world, this whole, the way appearance, I guess, is at the forefront?
It does occasionally.
Right.
You'll look at a lot of athletes. I mean, there are a lot of athletes who are overweight, and there are a lot of athletes who I think who are underweight. I just think when people are at the pointy end, sometimes they can just be a little bit too underweight, and it's just making them step back and look at the, again, it's big picture, right? It's, just generally, what we do with our top end athletes is try and get them to race weight for their A race, as we would term it, which are their A race, is their most important race of the season. And we try and get them to do that generally quite slowly if they're at a certain weight. You can drive it down hard, but you can guarantee that's going to affect other things if you do it that way. But yeah, I mean, I look at the industry as a whole, and where I'll say it again, we're not immune to people thinking that being super skinny is the way to be as an athlete.
Brilliant. I think, is it a case that you would be, if somebody did have to diet into a race, get them there a few weeks prior and feed them into that race?
Again, it depends on body fat percentages and where they're at.
In the ideal scenario, would you say?
Yeah, do you know, I'd probably take them, I'd get them to do it slower than that. I'd get them sort of almost race ready, maybe about a month out. But get them to that point a couple of months before. So get them to sort of hit that point a couple of months out. So they're doing it gradually over time. And again, because it boils down to making sure they are hitting all the key performance targets in training, and you can't do that if you're lacking energy availability.
Yeah, and I think, like, obviously it's a performance-based sport, and that's, you know, specificity is everything. And maybe you have to have that conversation as, listen, what are we trying to do here?
Yeah. So, I mean, here's the thing. I say this to a lot of people. It's like, it's great that you've got a six-pack, but it stinks that you can't actually do the performance training sessions that we're asking you to do. You see people super skinny, but they get out of the water. Not people we coach, by the way, but you see people in triathlon scenarios where they're just super skinny, but they just can't put the swim session together. They can't finish it, or they're knackered all the time. And again, it's just from our perspective, it's like, let's just drive it down slowly and see how you perform. Because if you sit at this percentage, but you look great and you perform great, that's your racing weight in my mind.
Is there anything in your kind of industry that you just think, oh God, this needs to die a death? There's a lot of traditions, I guess, out there, especially with, say, for example, bodybuilding, MMA, boxing. Is there stuff in there you're just thinking, why are people still doing this?
I think more, I said it earlier, it's more is better.
Right.
I think that's the one thing that we hear all the time, you know, more. It's not the case. It shouldn't be the case. It should be specific to what's required from the athlete to build. And then from a nutritional perspective, same thing, you know, carbohydrates after six make you fat.
I mean, we can kind of bridge on to the nutritional myth busting module that we're on this week in MNU. And I thought, you know, for yourself, outside of the endurance, is there any kind of that springs to mind that you want to talk about or we can talk about?
Protein kills your kidneys. That's a good one. I love that.
Yeah. And I think, was it last year or the year before that? I think there was like I don't know whether it was an Australian who died who'd had like a ridiculously rare genetic condition and she was unaware of it and died as a result of.
Yes. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah. It was all over social media and the papers and on the news, I was noticing. And that just funded more nonsense about protein.
Yeah. And I think people need to remember this is one person out of billions.
And I think there was a study just done. I can't remember who it was. Brain gone dead. And they've just proven that in healthy individuals, that high protein diets is not harmful at all, which is great.
Yeah, and I think key ones that came up within this week's lecture was gluten.
Okay, yeah. I've not heard this lecture yet, so you're ahead of the game from me. I haven't even looked at it yet.
Well, you strap yourself in, Simon.
Right, tell me about gluten.
Well, it's arid, unless you're celiac, really, you know. Next. So obviously, the majority of people who believe they're intolerant towards these things, if there's a genuine intolerance, you know, they say maybe that this is what's preventing fat loss. And it tends to be the case if you are intolerant to anything that actually weight loss is a symptom of this thing.
Yeah, I think that one thing that I think, which always makes me smile, is that eating higher fat diets makes you lose more fat.
Yeah, that's definitely it. It's you become a fat burning machine, I've heard.
Yeah, exactly. So people think, oh, if I eat a higher fat diet, I'll lose more body fat. Losing body fat's all about calories, right? You know, get your calories under what your target baseline should be, and you'll lose body fat. High fat diets in our world generally means to people that they become a fat burning machine. And that's the fact that, in a kind of way, they're right. They tend to upregulate their body's ability to use body fat, as intramuscular fats for fuel and blood lipids. But it's not generally saying that you can turn your body fat into fuel, because that just takes it. the body takes ages for that to be liberated, and that's all about an energy equation. So I hit that one a lot. That always makes me smile.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a marketing thing. You know, I know a certain coach of bodies who uses that quite a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you know, and everybody's, you know, hoying avocado on everything. And, you know, it's like, I'm fat burning.
I have, again, you know, I watch all of this from the outside world in the fitness industry, and it almost makes you horribly biased to the other way, and sort of kick back at it, thinking, well, you know, I kind of don't want anything to do with it now because it's just so polarized towards that. And again, I have to check myself every now and again and go, look, you know, that can work. But ultimately, I think the one thing from our perspective is that calories are the most important thing to look at first for losing body fat and losing weight.
Yeah. And I think when people tend to remove or change, it's just because of their general consciousness about their nutrition that's having this kind of massive health effect, you know, and they're becoming, as we've spoke about in the course, health-seeking individuals. They automatically, or kind of organically, I guess, go into a calorie deficit regardless of whether they know this or not. They've removed lots of food or food groups that have calories in.
Yeah, well, so most people that start that sort of diet are becoming consciously aware of the food that they eat, and therefore they tend to eat less. Just as you say, whether it's consciously or unconsciously, and generally it's consciously and unconsciously. But you know, yeah, that's a great myth. And I'm trying to think. Something else is trying to grab me in the back of my mind, and I can't remember. It's not coming out at the moment. But there are some great myths, I think, in the long distance community when it comes to certain aspects of nutrition. But I think, yeah, you know, high fat diets make you lose more fat is a classic, and carbohydrates are inherently fattening.
After 6 p.m.
Oh yeah, only after 6 p.m.
And for breakfast, because of insulin sensitivity.
Oh yeah, insulin. Let's go down that route.
Yeah, well, that's something else. You know, we are being very sarcastic right now. You know, and obviously, fasted cardio. That was something that kind of came into the lecture, which just sprung to my head. You know, and these typically. Do people who do fasted cardio end up increasing their total daily energy expenditure?
Yeah. So there is a thing at the moment. I've been watching a coach talking about fasted cardio for improved fat loss, but he's not explaining it that way. he's saying if you do fasted cardio, it helps you burn more body fat while you're doing it. And those sort of things just makes me want me to hit my head against the wall, because it's like, well, no, that's not right. And potentially it could be quite dangerous, you know. I love all these things. We're never immune to these things, as you guys are in the fitness industry. I think we all have the same message in just different ways.
I think as, you know, I've evolved personally as an athlete, you know, I look back and I'm listening to this week's lecture and thinking, yep, done that. You know, I've tried to have a high fat, low carb diet in the past. I've done fasted this and that. I was at the other end of the spectrum doing high intense interval training, you know, the next year. And it's been very kind of like fatty as opposed to now having that big picture view at nutrition. You know, I've purchased wheat belly in the past and all of these sort of things because it was a done thing.
I tell you what I was going to ask you, if you've done high fat, how did you feel on that?
Awful.
Really? Did you try and do any high intensity stuff on that?
Oh well, yeah, I was a bodybuilder. Well, but you know what I mean? It sounds daft saying it now. Like, I still tried to train the way I trained, however, eating high fat, and I just felt gosh. Yeah, absolutely awful.
Did you look flat on it?
I felt flat. I mean, this is years back, so I'm casting my mind, but yeah, I felt flat. I felt tired, and it was an effort. It was an effort to follow. Like, don't get us wrong, the food was tasty. I mean, who doesn't like bacon and everything fried in coconut oil? I mean, I'll even admittedly say I put coconut oil in my coffee.
Did you?
Yeah, and I would tell myself I liked it.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
I
Do you want
never put butter in though.
Yeah. All right.
Not an
Okay.
idiot.
I was just about to put the phone down on you.
Simon, hello?
I think you know, if I'm really honest, when I did my when I did Ironman Austria, I decided to try and do that as a fat adapted athlete because I wanted to see what it was like. And you know, the training was good. If I look back and think back to it, I think my high intensity stuff was a bit rubbish, but I didn't do a bad time. And I did the Ironman fine and I felt good, but when I came back and started racing again on the bikes, I actually thought I'd broken myself because I get into a race and normally I can pull away from people on a bike. And I was sitting in amongst the bunch and they were pulling away from me and I was pushing as much as I could into the pedals and thinking, nothing's happening. What the hell's going on? And I actually thought I needed to go and see a doctor for a while. And it wasn't until I spoke to a coach friend of mine, and they're like, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And I was like, "This," and said, "Yeah, well, that should work." And they said, "What's your nutrition like?" So I was chatting away to them. I was like, "Mate, just eat carbohydrates. Seriously, you'll be on fire once you do that." So put carbohydrates back in. A week later, went out with some friends, and we always like to trash it around with those guys. And I was dropping them right, left, and center on the bike. And I'm like, "Okay, you know." Carbohydrates really are important for this,
I
but
think
I never went down the butter in the coffee,
no, me neither.
but I did go down oodles of coconut oil and avocados.
Was everything cooked in coconut oil?
Yeah, you know everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything. And it, yeah, I'm glad I don't do that now. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah. But people maybe who are listening to that, they still do. And I think like your lack of ability to sustain this diet, I think at the time you think it's a reflection of self-worth. You're like, you know, I can't stick to this, but I'm gonna try. And like, it's, you know, about being mature to go, right, this isn't working. You know, I actually put on weight during my fat adapted.
Really?
Yeah, I was a fat burning machine, but I still put on body fat because like I felt like shit, so I stopped moving around. Like, you know, my NEAT, I'd imagine, just went through the floor. My training intensity was through the floor, and obviously I was just shoveling a shitload of, you know, thinking, oh, I need more fat. You know, more is better, as you
More is
say. You know, get more. I need to be more fat adapted.
yeah,
Yeah, weekend I'll get a pizza. But you know, it's ridiculous. But looking at it now, we can laugh. But at the time, you're thinking, "Oh God, what's the matter with us? This should be working." But it's, I don't know, hearing a little bit of information and just running with it, and not having the critical mind to actually dissect it and ask the simple question. Is it applicable towards my requirements?
And I think it's a really good it's a good question. Or what sprung into my mind at the moment is by working on MNU and having the ability to go and ask really educated people in the Facebook group has allowed you to, if you're brave enough, to jump in and go, "I've got a question, and it's just come to mind, but is there anybody out there can help?" Or you can do their search engine and have a look at it and go, "Someone has already asked that question somewhere on the line." And it allows you to get straight to that, get to the really good information without having to spend too much time rifling around the internet and coming to a dead end anyway. So I love that about MNUs, that you can actually go, actually, do you know what? I've got a question that needs a really good answer to it, so let's go and ask the people that know the answer properly, or at least can direct you to the right way of finding it. It's been very helpful, especially with some of my clients. But if we go back to the fat adaption, you just remind me by talking about it. There are one thing that athletes tend to do, more is better, and I see it all the time with my athletes when they're racing, is they just have too much race product in their drinks bottles and eat too much on the bike. And there's a big problem with the long distance community of gut issues. A lot of people when they're racing, they maybe don't have the confidence in their ability to race at pace or their fitness, so they try and back it up by eating more carbohydrate on the bike than we'd normally do, all those sort of things. So this is why I don't bag fat adaption or working as on your metabolic flexibility, because potentially that means that you need less race fuel for racing, and then you have less issue with the gut when you're racing, because you don't need so much. But I see a lot of people in Ironman, and this is the thing that always makes me facepalm myself, when you're watching them run around, people being sick into bushes and things. And you just think, that's just not, why is that happening? And it's generally because people are over-consuming carbohydrates in the form of maltodextrins and gels and bars, because they're eating too much.
Thinking about it, the exogenous ketones, something that is commonly used within the endurance world.
Do you know, people play around with that and talk about it a lot. From my understanding is there could be an application for it, but how you apply it is difficult. And it can, if you don't know what you're doing, and I certainly haven't experimented or looked into it too much, because of everything I've heard people talking about that do know about it, they say it's too full on for the digestive system to deal with. And potentially if you eat too much, or how you apply it is difficult, and if you eat too much of it, it can cause gastric issues down the line. So for the very reason you're having it is to stop gastric issues, it can cause gastric issues, and I don't want to play with that. Again, it's more stuff for an athlete to get wrong.
I don't really know anything about them, and it's not something I would be kind of pushing on to people.
I know people who do push it, and I just look at it and go, it's way out of my scope of practice. I don't know enough about it, and from what I have sort of read up about it, it doesn't back itself up just yet. I'd need to know more about it. I don't think there's enough decent products that I know, like, or trust to help on it either.
And I think we need to remind people that supplements are supplementary. It's mental. Blows my mind. But at the end of the day, this is maybe the 2-3% on top of the well-rounded nutrition, the good training principle, and structure. And everybody is worrying about, like, their gels or their beta-alanine and all of these things, and it's like, listen, get the basics sorted, and maybe this is just the icing on the cake, I guess.
Yeah, so do you know what, you and I think exactly the same way. I pretty much say to most people, focus on the training, eat really good broad spectrum foods, enjoy your food, stick within calorie balance, don't get too sexy with your food and your supplementation to start off with, make that work, sleep well, hydrate well, repeat, and once you've got to that point where you're feeling good about yourself, then let's get sexy with your nutrition. But loads of people are always focusing on the sexy side of their nutrition and never on the what really counts. I think that's the basis of my coaching. It's like, let's just keep it absolutely on point for the stuff that you can control and make sure that you're healthy, energized, and can continue to do that day in, day out. That's the most important thing, right?
And I think that's one of the things that the best coaches do. And if you listen to the best coaches we consider within our industry, they just keep shit simple, you know. And if people ask us about supplements, and, you know, I can, like, obviously say, well, you know, there's this, this, and this. However, it's not necessary at this point. You know, let's say, for example, caffeine. Have a cup of coffee before you come to the gym. You don't need, you know, ripped freak 6,000 in your system with all of these, you know, questionable ingredients, when you can just kind of open your pot in the kitchen cupboard and get a similar sort of kick out of it.
I tell you what I was going to ask you, is there actually a product called Ripped Freak 6000? Because I bet there is.
Well, if there isn't, me and you, Simon, can... we're going to add another business to your list.
Yeah, I bet there is Ripped 6000, whatever it is out there. Yeah,
well, you know, we can start with 3000 and then six. You hit them with 6000 later on down the line.
Can we charge more for that?
Well, of course. You know, it's 3,000 better.
And then 3,000 red?
Yeah. I mean, we're just brainstorming. You stay on the line after this. But, yeah, I've lost my trail of thought now. My brain's all over.
That's us taking the mickey out of the supplement industry now.
And it is such a fickle industry, but it's worth billions. But I think, I mean, as I spoke to Shana on the last episode, people are looking for this silver bullet. And to one degree, I think it's great that you're always looking for self-improvement. However, you're not expecting to go from 0 to 100 overnight. You're already maybe at 95. And you're just always trying to eke out this little bit of a bit more, which I think is important for a competitive athlete to always want to get a little bit better.
Yeah. But then you hit the point earlier by turning around and saying, actually, there's no point in giving yourself beet or alanine if you don't. Beet or alanine is citrulline malate to buffer lactate if you're not turning up to training every day and you're basically eating pizza every night. You know, and you go to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. What's the point in doing any of that? So I think those things are exactly that. They are supplements to really good behaviors before that have to happen religiously over time.
And I think regardless of what sport you're doing, you know, these things, energy balance, protein requirements, sleep, stress management, all the boring, unsexy things, are the things that we're trying to promote and sell ourselves on.
I say this all the time. It's not sexy. It's not exciting. It's training and it's nutrition and it's just day to day. And the thing is, if we wanted to be making more money, we could really sell lots of stuff off the back of trying to make it more exciting, drill down onto one aspect and say, you need to go down this route and buy this product and all that sort of stuff. But I don't believe in that. And I think it's the wrong message to send out. And there's too many confused people out there who believe that potentially that is the easiest way to do it. And I reckon we lose athletes because we don't make it sound sexy when they speak to us about their training. We just tell them how it's going to be. And they want us to turn around and go, well, no, if you do it this way, it'll make you faster. We can make you faster, but you have to work for it. That's the industry, right? We're fighting that all the time.
And I suppose, you know, with yourself, because what you're doing is very niche, I'd imagine people are already going to kind of know who you are and they know what they're getting into. And I think, as you mentioned prior to the podcast, you're trying to kind of create the Simon brand, as I'm trying to create the Ian Bickle brand. We're trying to gain trust amongst our audience, I guess.
I think you're doing it better than me at the moment, I'm going to be honest.
Oh, thank you. I'm trying.
It's bloody good. I'm watching and going, I need to do more of that. But actually, it's just doing, just talking about what we do daily, and I don't think that's very interesting, but in actual fact, other people, when they speak to me about it and they see it, they go, actually, it's really cool because you show us that you do have good days, bad days, great days, fun days, all that sort of stuff. And I am trying to build my brand because I think there's a lot of people at my age who are starting triathlon, doing more bike stuff, doing lots more long distance stuff, and they're maybe going about it the wrong way round, or the long way round. And I think that...
Well, it is endurance. Maybe they're doing it the right way around, Simon.
Yeah, good point. Good point. But yeah, so it's like I'm going to document what I'm doing in training. I do a lot more strength training than I used to. And I just know, so last year when I was racing, I knew something was wrong. And I would be cracking up some hills and riding in amongst the top bunch. And just saying to myself, I don't feel right. It feels like my legs feel a bit empty. And it was because I'd taken out my strength training from my program because I'd just been focusing on riding the bike and doing power stuff on the bike. And I'm now back in the gym, been doing some really good squat stuff and building that back in. And when I'm squatting and doing trap bar deadlifts, I can really feel that point in my quads that I was thinking was broken in the latter half of the summer. It's kind of, whether it's anecdotal or not, it's kind of sort of rammed it home to me that I was losing strength. And I was encouraging more strength loss because all I was doing was riding the bike. So I think working on that will allow me to just go harder and faster later on. So I find that really exciting. And I think if I can turn around to people my age and go, look, you don't need to be going and doing all this long distance stuff. You could potentially be doing much better stuff in the gym. You could be doing a little bit more higher intensity and all out work on your turbo at home, have a bit more of a social life and still perform at a great level. And I think I'm looking into it now, trying to get my hands on many studies as I can, because I think as you age, if you don't use it, you lose it, more so than maybe a younger athlete. And nothing gives me greater pleasure to be able to jump on a bike and trash the hell out of a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
And they're always like, how old are you? I'm like, yeah, I'm killing you. And maybe it's just me. I've always been a little bit of a fighter when it comes to sport. I like my competition. And I want to see how far I can take it, really. I want to see how fast and as strong and as how long that'll last, as long as I keep working at it.
And I think, again, last week with Shana, you know, she was saying she was 49, you're 47. And, you know, I'm currently 33, but I am genuinely excited to what the future brings if I continue on this path and, you know, stay uninjured. You know, that's generally the optimism you should have about your training.
Yeah, totally. And I think, you know, staying as injury-free as possible, especially in our sport, is hard. But that, it doesn't necessarily have to be hard. And this is where good coaching comes in. It's when your coach turns around to you and helps you and guides you, go, look, maybe you should back off a little bit and we can focus on other areas and give you confidence in doing that, rather than most long-distance athletes just to keep cracking on and keep putting more and more into the tank and then they break themselves. And that's, you know, that's another big aspect of the long-distance community that is, you know, injury is seen as almost like a badge of honour. And it's like, well, I look at it as a really bad training performance. It's like, potentially you're not listening to your body the way you should do, or you're too scared to back off and give it a chance to recover.
I think it's the same within the bodybuilding world, is that if, for example, contest prep, it has to be awful.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly, yeah. So,
if you're enjoying it slightly, you're doing it wrong.
So, but you've done how many bodybuilding competitions now?
Well, I've done three. and like I done a photo shoot only last year, which I tread as if I was dieting for a competition. And each time I do it, it's better and easier, and I take myself further. It gets really shitty towards the end, like regardless of what the nutrition looks like. You know, there's a tipping point where you've got no fat on your glutes, and sitting down hurts. Yeah, and
I think I heard you talk about that actually.
it's just horrible.
What fascinates me actually, when you get that low in body fat, does your concentration go a little bit?
You're useless. You
No.
know,
Explain, because I'm interested about how you feel when you get that.
well, let's for an example, my fiance, who was like 9 months pregnant, I struggled to help her put together some flat pack, so she did it on her own whilst I kind of like slumped, just dizzy, feeling awful, tired. You know, the majority of my energy expenditure come through just steps, and a walk that would maybe usually take us, half an hour, maybe would take pushing on an extra 20 minutes. It was just my feet were hurting because I had no fat on them, and the amount of walking I was
Yeah.
doing. So it's one of them things. It's not a pleasurable experience, but it's a one that I absolutely love, because everybody's like, why do it? And it's because I want to and I can, but I only do it so often.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think from getting that low from and hearing you talk about that, from my perspective, from a coach's perspective, as an athlete's perspective, when you're that low on body fat, and I'm not saying any of our athletes get that low, but you can understand when you get very low on energy availability and body fat, how it can ruin your thought processes,
Yeah.
and make you feel like crap. And that's, I think that's really important to get across to athletes.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, from my perspective, I would love to work with competitive as athletes and physique athletes. However, I don't think I am sexy enough, so I'm trying to drive the message, with my content. That listen, you can still do this. However, it doesn't have to be like kind of what is traditional, I guess. And people tend to break away, don't want to break away from that for a certain degree.
So my way of thinking, so if you're saying you don't think you're sexy enough, is that because you don't talk about all the
The
bells?
grind.
Yeah, so you talk about the grind, not the bells and whistles that go along with it.
I talk, well, I don't like. I mean, I think everybody wants to suffer for some reason. That they want to feel like stuff's working, whereas like the feedback I get with a lot of my clients is like, doesn't feel like a diet, and I'm like, we're winning.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
And as far as like contest prep or getting really lean, I don't see it as a diet. I see it as an energy deficit, and it's an extension of what I already do. I don't eat any differently apart from the amounts I eat, and as I get leaner, I will probably shift more favorably towards high volume foods because I want to be satiated. And it's kind of like I refer to it like a dimmer switch. As you get towards it, the light switches up, whereas very much people treat it like just a normal light switch on off. Either on prep or off prep, and obviously the failure rates are a lot higher when you've got this kind of on off black and white view towards nutrition and training, I guess.
It's a good way of looking at it. I'm pretty sure I would not like to do what you do and help people prep for bodybuilding competitions.
I think I would rather prep for a show than go on a long run. I would rather spend 8 months in prep than run a marathon.
Yeah, see, look, I'd rather run the marathon than
Yeah,
spend 8 months in
but
prep.
and this is the beauty of fitness, with each to their own.
Totally.
Yeah. Anyway, we've been talking a while, and I've really enjoyed today. So we'll start wrapping things up, Simon, if that's okay. Where can people kind of find out about you? You're getting more active on Instagram, so if you wouldn't mind just sharing the kind of your website, your handles on social media, etc.
Okay, so my business is triforceendurance.com, and we have our own website, and we have Instagram, which is Triforce Endurance, and then you've got Facebook, which is also Triforce Endurance. It's really straightforward to find us. And if you are training for Ironmans and triathlons or long distance stuff, you can read our blogs. And also, I have my own Instagram, which I'm starting to sort of play around with and have a bit more fun with. And that's Simon de Burgh.
Brilliant. And I'll put all these in the show notes as well so people can go straight to them.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. It's been great to chat.
No, I've been brilliant. It's been an eye-opener, and I hope everybody that is listening has enjoyed it, and I'm sure they have. Again, any MNU students that are listening, Simon just messaged me on Instagram and we're like, yep, let's sort it out. So feel free to give us a message, and if there's any particular topics that you want to cover. I'm very interested. I'm enjoying the podcast, hearing everybody's backgrounds. So one last time, just thank you very much, Simon.
Thank you very much, Ian. Really good to chat.